Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 21st of December, recording at 9:52 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick review of the week. Now, we had seen fairly ebullient stock markets as we entered the week. But short-term overbought conditions had developed, as discussed, and we've seen markets lose some momentum in here and then spill over, and the fiscal cliff tedium has been an important factor here in terms of unsettling nerves to a certain extent. On a short-term basis, we're overbought. There's year-end profit taking, as I say, the fiscal cliff situation. Now, this day has seen mostly selling pressure, and in Asia, markets were generally down. We had some sharpish declines in China and also in Japan, which had been quite overextended on a short-term basis. And I think that signals that we're commencing a reaction and consolidation phase. Now, will it be shallow or deep? My guess is that they'll hold most of the gains. If they hold over two-thirds of the gains that we've seen recently, that'll be a good sign. That'll be a healthy consolidation and probably a buying opportunity as well in those markets. And more on them perhaps in a minute. Now, Europe has been very similar here today. We have, and it had been steady. It's been really quite steady overall this week and in recent weeks. And the declines here today are quite modest. And I can see that Spain is a bit of an exception and actually shows a small advance here today. On Wall Street, well, it's down about 1% here on the fiscal cliff concerns, and that is dragging other markets lower around the globe, and not least regionally. That's weighing on several of them, although as I look at my screen, and we're not quite closed yet, but we've got very modest gains on Mexico and Canada here today. Now, let's step back and take a look at the year. It's been really quite volatile, but it started strongly enough in January, giving way to the big rally led by Wall Street, and then that gave way to a correction around April. And we had another strong rally commencing in June, a high in September for Wall Street, and another correction in November before the year-end rally. Now, Europe, interestingly, outperformed from around mid-year, and a number of emerging markets have had another really good year. From Asia, particularly the ASEAN sector in Asia, right through to Mexico, which has been a strong performer. Now, among emerging markets, the elephant in the room in terms of exceptions was China, which was a serial underperformer, as often discussed. And that being the world's second largest economy and on its way to becoming the largest economy, it's just a matter of whether that takes 10 or 15 years or so. And it has a big influence generally. And China had weighed, for instance, on commodity prices. It had weighed particularly on commodity shares, which had reverted from their growth phase when the Chinese market was very strong in the last decade to becoming cyclicals once again. And therefore, the events that we've seen in the last couple of months, I think are really quite significant. And the most important one, and I won't dwell on this because I've discussed it many times, is that the big rally coinciding with the changeover in power. It's interesting and at times impressive the way China orchestrates these things. But the big rally has finally broken the defining characteristic of the downtrend of 3.25 years, which is the progression of lower rally highs. There were at least 9 lower rally highs over that time period, and they were broken to the upside. So again, I look for a consolidation, and I think that people are cautious regarding China, which is understandable enough, and that's probably a positive sign. It shows that people are not invested there. It moved so quickly. How could they be? And I maintain that China is going to go from being a serial underperformer to a serial outperformer, meaning that it's likely to outperform most big cap markets in 2013, including the United States, in my opinion. Now, the other really exciting thing that has happened here over the last several weeks has been Japan's election with Shinzo Abe coming in and winning the election rather handsomely, promising to weaken the yen, to expand money supply, and really to create a better environment for the Japanese economy and not least Japanese export companies. Now, we've been watching Japan, we've all been watching Japan, well, for a very long time, and waiting for some evidence that a recovery was really genuine and going to hold. There were hopes when Koizumi was prime minister, but investors were disappointed once again. I think this is probably the best chance yet since Japan peaked way back in 1990, and I think it's worth backing because the key factor, as far as we were concerned, was the strength of the yen. And while a strong currency can be laudable, and some economies can deal with that for quite some time, and Japan has. Eventually, if everybody else is involved in sort of a covert competitive devaluation, let alone with the help of quantitative easing, then your quantitative easing, you're going to see a serial underperformance by the very strong currency country. And that we have indeed with Japan, and it becomes quite insidious. Because as companies suffer that competition, they are less attractive to the more entrepreneurial managers who either become depressed or leave. It saps morale generally, and that's exactly what we've seen throughout Japan for quite some time. So some of the really big exciting names in Japan from the 1980s. Well, their shares are so depressed. The likes of Sony, for instance. Now, will they reemerge over the next few years? I think there's a good chance they will. Nothing's guaranteed here, of course, but they're worth a bet, in my opinion. So those big exporters. Again, very depressed share prices. valuations are generally attractive, although Japanese companies are not high yielders overall. But it's an interesting it's an interesting opportunity, and I would play it in two ways. I would have a short yen position, my own short yen position. I held on to it a little bit too long. Rather than take the profit as it got up to an important former high, which is a natural pause point, it was a little bit overbought and overextended. You could see that on the charts. It was either take the profit or put in a trailing stop, and I had chose to put in the trailing stop, which is triggered. So it I had a reduced profit on the trade, but I will, more importantly, excuse me, I will happily reshort the yen against the Australian dollar, which I chose because of the interest rate differential, or some other currency. I'm sure that I will have other shorts in the Japanese yen, because I think this is going to be at least a medium-term story, and I may well increase my overall exposure to Japan, which has been mainly in the healthcare sector, and that's been fortunate because that has held up really quite well. But I think that the better plays, if Abe is successful over the next couple of years or so, we could see some very big increases from some of those very, very depressed exporters. And that would be interesting. And I think the United States also favors that as a would favors that as a policy, would really like to see a stronger Japan in the Asian region. The United States is always a little bit edgy about China's rapid development and power, but understandably so. And you know, it wasn't that many months ago that Japan was, I beg your pardon, China was throwing its weight around, particularly in terms of territorial waters. I certainly don't think we've seen the last of that story, although hopefully China will concentrate more on just developing its overall economic pressure. But big economies always throw their weight around a little bit, don't they? And they always have. Okay. Now, other stories, really. The commodity exporting countries had generally underperformed. Now, that's not surprising given China's really poor performance, but we've seen them perk up considerably with China's sharp rebound. And I think they may be some of the more interesting plays here, and they're good value plays here for 2013. Now, moving on from stock markets here, let's take a look at what some of these commodity markets, or let's take a look at the bond market overall. We've seen a bit of a loss of momentum in recent weeks, and that has also, of course, happened in the precious metals, and I think there's a connection there, although it seems unlikely when you first think about it. But both were regarded as safe havens by some people. Now, gold means different things to different people, from it's pretty, it's unique, to it's an insurance policy, to it's a safe haven, to well, for me, the main appeal of gold is that it's hard money, and it always has been, and I think it always will be. And when they're really throwing all the QE around, as we've certainly seen over a very long period of time, well, I definitely want to be holding on to some gold. But the other safe haven, which had also been one of the best bull markets going, was the government bond market, government bond markets. And the quantitative easing that we've seen, remember, this was something that, at least in modern times, that Ben Bernanke invented or reinvented, and increasingly we've seen other governments adopt their own versions of quantitative easing, and other central banks, I should say, and that really is from the European Central Bank. And we've seen China is now following a similar route. And the UK has been very actively involved in all of this. So we've got more quantitative easing in here now than we've seen previously since the crisis in 2008. And that is a powerful tailwind here for a number of these markets. But I digress a little bit, and these audios are unscripted, but I'm going to come back to the bonds and precious metals. And what I have said on a number of occasions is that, as far as I'm concerned, there's only one really clear bubble in these global markets, and it is a very, very big one. And it is these global bond markets, and none more so than, say, U.S. Treasuries. Now, people get a little annoyed, or bond investors get a little annoyed when I mention this. And they say, well, you've been talking about this being a bubble for some time. And yes, indeed, I have, because it's our job to identify what we think are our bubbles, just as it is when we think we've seen climactic selling and very oversold markets. But a few things about big bubbles: they always go further than people expect. And that includes the people who've identified them. The biggest mistake that one ever makes, with a bubble, is to point out that it's a bubble and get out of it or short it. And since the bubbles almost always run further, become bigger than people actually expect, that's a tactical mistake here overall. So I'm not saying get out of all your long-dated government bond positions. What I'm saying is recognize what it is, or you'll give back an awful lot of money when that actually starts to burst, which would be a very sad development. Recognize what it is, because people always come up with all sorts of creative rationalizations and speculative logic as to why they're not really bubbles or why they're going to go on further. And that's obviously not very disciplined. It's understandable, though, emotionally. And people don't like to see their big bull market positions eventually run out of steam, let alone become burst bubbles. So my own feeling on this is that quantitative easing is likely to keep the precious metals markets, bond markets, these big bond markets, quite firm for a while longer. But I would use the safety precaution of trailing stops. And once out, I would be very inclined to stay out. I've had a few flurries from time to time with decidedly mixed success. That's a euphemism for saying they've cost me money in the last couple of years, more often than I made a bit of money in them, in terms of shorting. And I realize that it's not a great idea, to do that. And I don't want to be shorting these markets until it is clear, technically, that the bond market bubble is bursting. And then, because of the yields, although they're much reduced, they're still a headwind if you have a short position. Then I think my tactic will really be to try to buy some out of the money put options, and hope that I have timed it right so that the options don't expire before we get the moves. But that hasn't happened yet. I'm just outlining as my thinking on a future policy. Here, I do just keep an eye on that whole bond market cycle, because it, in my opinion, well, look at it this way. People have said to me, well, it's not a bubble. Well, first, yields have been falling for over 30 years, and debt is rising in the US and the other countries with the big bond market bubbles very, very rapidly. And it's only the QE, the central bank, coming in and buying most of the new supply that is keeping yields low. So, in terms of what are the characteristics of a bubble, it occurs to me that most of them are there. And I don't see any other big major bubble. Now, I was talking a little while ago about precious metals in the same sentence with bond markets, although they don't have a great deal in common, it would seem, except for the fact that for some people, they've been regarded as safe havens. And a point that I have made in earlier audios and also in my written copy is to say that for people who were holding gold purely or primarily because it was a safe haven, the improvement in confidence that we've seen as Europe is no longer being described as a crisis every time people think of it or refer to it, and because China is now showing signs of emerging from its long slowdown, and because really equity markets have done quite well overall. And now we have an interesting situation in Japan, so that the crisis of sort of imploding growth that people were talking about, and a deflationary environment overall, that is clearly changing. And I was chatting with a subscriber that I've known for a very long time here earlier this afternoon. And he'd said that some of those very big hedge funds, which had large gold positions, such as Paulson's hedge fund, and I said that some of these people have been moving away. And that's understandable because really, we saw the peak back in the first half of around mid 2011. And although gold is almost certainly going to end up complete this year with another gain, the 12th consecutive upside year, it'll be a modest profit this year overall. And it hasn't done that much, obviously, for over a year, for over 16 months. Now, I think that's all part of the long reaction, first profit taking, then consolidation phase, following the big upward accelerations that we get. But Nevertheless, you see the point I'm making, that people who've been holding gold throughout that whole pullback, and these are mostly long-term investors, I think, in some of these funds, are looking around and saying, well, wait a minute, okay, gold's up, what is it, around 5%, maybe less, here this year. Japan and China have done more than that in a few weeks. So it's understandable that some of those people would be starting to move away from those positions. And if they do that, then those hedge funds have to sell some gold. And so I think that's what we've actually seen. My feeling is that we're now near an area where support is likely to be encountered by these precious metals. But we need to see some good upward dynamics and follow through to the upside to confirm that they have bottomed within their overall ranges. Gold, as I speak, incidentally, is up $11.50 here right now. And the now that's the futures price. Sorry, the bullion is up $9. That's at 16.56 and 75 cents as I speak. So I think gold's pretty good value down here, but I will feel far more comfortable when I see some good dynamics to the upside, which would really be consistent with my medium to longer term outlook, which is that gold is overall back into an accumulation phase, and the evidence will continue to indicate that while those lows around mid-year are not challenged. Now, if we see gold go down and fall through those lows, anything can happen in markets, although that's not what I'm forecasting, that's not what I expect, then clearly my forecast will have to be changed. So let's see what happens. We're oversold down here following a good shakeout, and I think that the people who just want gold because it's hard money during a time of quantitative easing will be increasing their positions overall. Now, in terms of currency markets, the dollar really is soft when we're seeing the risk-on environment. Risk-on and risk-off is a banal term, but banal terms, but you know what I'm referring to. So when we see Wall Street down, for instance, 1% here today, that puts a little life into the dollar, and it puts more life into the bond market. But overall, the U.S. dollar is a softish currency, and it's clear that sentiment in the markets regarding 2013, despite the fiscal cliff issue, is improving, and I think that's correct. I don't think 2013, or I'd be surprised if it was an extremely bullish year, but it will be for some markets, inevitably. Japan and China would be among my picks. I think, and if they go, then certainly if China moves, then we're going to see the industrial metals, and also I think that would spill over into precious metals, and we would also see the industrial mining shares, the Rio Tintos and the BHP Billitons, also doing much better overall. So I think the fear is gradually ebbing in terms of markets, but we're a long way from the sort of aggressive confidence and high-fiving that we see near the top of bull market phases. On the charts, as I mentioned at the very beginning, we have some short-term overbought conditions, and a number of markets have pushed up towards areas of previous resistance. But if you look at a broad range of stock markets, then you'll notice that the stronger European markets are already through the year's earlier highs, and the ASEAN markets, a number of them, again, have moved to new all-time highs. I think that's pointing the way most of these markets are going to move. And the fuel for that rise will be coming from the low interest rates that we see and the quantitative easing. And monetary factors are always hugely important in Fuller Money's analysis, and they remain very positive. They've been extremely good for the government bond markets. They are increasingly good for equity markets, although the equity markets are considerably more volatile so far than the bond markets. That will change as the bubble bursts in bonds. And I like equities. I like the valuations. They're quite reasonable. Companies have been, for the most part, disciplined. I particularly like some of our big themes, the autonomies subject to timing, in other words, how they're performing relative to their 200-day moving averages. When they get overextended on the upside, it's right to take some profits. When they come back and find support near those MAs, that's an additional buying opportunity if you're interested. I still like the dividend aristocrats, but we are very likely to see an improved relative performance, as I've already mentioned, in the mining shares. Oils may not participate in that among the industrial commodity sectors because there is still plenty of oil around while the global economy is not all that strong. And oil needs to be watched. Again, that can change when we get threats to production and as growth picks up. But the long-term trend that I've often mentioned is that we will see increased oil and gas production. The shale story is huge, and it's going to last for a good many years. And I think that that will delay the next recovery in precious metals. I'm sorry, it's Friday, and I'm a little tired, so I'll wrap this audio up fairly quickly. I didn't mean precious metals. I meant it will delay the next recovery in uranium miners. They're cheap, but they're going to remain range-bound, I think, for really quite some time. And they're not a significant... Well, they'll get some occasional flurries to the upside, but they're not. My point is, they're not going to get a sustained move to the upside anytime soon. But what I think will continue is that we'll see enhancements, improvements in the reactor technology, and that in the next decade, I expect those to be coming back into fashion here once again. Now. before I make another Freudian slip in here, I think it's time to say the year isn't quite over yet, but generally speaking, it's been a good year. How many people were forecasting at the beginning of 2012 that markets would do as well as they've been doing? Not all that many, I imagine. And we will have a brief comment, Owen and I, on Monday, the day before Christmas, I know some of you will be having much too much fun and important quality time with family and friends to look in, but we will be posting something. And I will take this earlier opportunity then to wish you a happy Christmas and seasonal greetings. All the best.